the Black Caucus on Holcomb's diversity progress, poor buy-in to a landlord-tenant settlement program, plus the Indiana Chamber's COVID campaign, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 27th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the head of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus says Governor Eric Holcomb is moving at a snail's pace when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Representative Robin Shackelford gives Holcomb a near-failing grade for his performance so far. Holcomb recently announced progress on his diversity plan for state government a full year after he proposed it. His chief equity, inclusion, and opportunity cabinet officer, who started early in the year, is still working on recommendations, and the state has launched a dashboard with inequity data. Robin Shackelford says that data is only so useful.
For people who have a hard time interpreting this data, there needs to be some narratives to give people an idea of where those disparities exist.
Shackelford adds the data itself isn't new, and she's frustrated that Holcomb hasn't gone further in a year.
He's been given enough information that his response should have been more targeted. His response should have been more action instead of research.
There's no timeline on when the equity cabinet officer will unveil a strategic plan. Is Governor Holcomb's progress on his equity and inclusion plan fast enough? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, a year in and we've got a dashboard?
Yeah, I mean, it's the goal that Representative Shackelford just talked about. He's a great leader of that caucus. Is targeted action. You got to know where you're targeting it. There's two things going on right now. There's a comprehensive review at the Law Enforcement Training Academy of what the next class of police officers are going to be trained. Those methods, those strategies. And so on one hand, they're reviewing that. That'll be released by the end of the month, and with the recommendations how to change that curriculum so that systemic racism is better identified, so strategies are put in place to avoid that in the future. The second thing that's happening is the dashboard. If you're going to, on one hand, try to target workforce resources, target social services, and do other things, you need to know where to do that because these resources aren't unlimited. It's not just about did state government hire more Black people. That is a one-dimensional metric that needs to move, but it can't be the beginning and end of the story. But you got to know that 25.4% of the arrests in the state of Indiana in 2020 were of African Americans, who make up 9.4% of the population. You need to know those things, and that data is in that dashboard, so you can mobilize state government and the services that it provides and target it in the places that where it's most needed.
And Delaney, to that point, it helps to know where to point in order to go where you want to go, and the dashboard presumably does that. So isn't that the right start?
Come on, Brandon. I mean, what we're talking about here is talking the talk, but not doing anything, which is basically how Governor Holcomb governs. He doesn't want to take any steps that might offend his right wing. If he's concerned about equity and he's concerned about inclusion, he would stand up and say that the legislative districts ought to be drawn by an
man, that's a record
serious.
Time that we got to gerrymandering.
When was the last time?
When
was the last time the party of Lincoln elected an African American to the Indiana General Assembly? The answer is not in your lifetime, and that's where this all begins. They just had a class of graduates from the State Police Academy. You can count on one hand the number of women and minority members in that class. If he wanted to do something, we know where the problems are. It is in gerrymandering, it is in healthcare, and it is in law enforcement. And if he wanted to do something, he has adequate resources to do it. He doesn't want to do anything. He wants to kick the can down the road like he does with every other decision that has the potential to offend the right wing of his party. The same thing with the masks, the same thing with mandating COVID-19 vaccinations to go to school. You can be mandated to have chicken pox, but you can't be mandated to have something that can kill you. It is ridiculous how little leadership he shows. And Robin Shackelford is exactly right. He isn't doing anything. He's just trying to put what he thinks is a Band-Aid on what everyone recognizes as a problem without doing anything.
Nikki Kelly, we know Governor Holcomb loves a dashboard, but a full year after he gave his address, which was 2 months after he said, I'm going to come up with a plan last year, did you expect more by now?
I think it's definitely moving a bit slow, especially since the data that's on the dashboard isn't new data per se. I mean, it looks great and it's a little more easily searchable, but there's nothing sort of new or fascinating in those numbers. But you have to start somewhere. And I suppose, you know, he should get some credit for trying to move us forward in some manner. But I would expect some serious recommendations soon in order to be able to do anything in the next session.
To that very point, then, if the Chief Equity, Inclusion, and Opportunity Cabinet Officer, who's been on the job for, what is it now, eight months, who's been on the job, comes out with a strategic plan across state government, if we have this outside party review with results soon at the State Police Academy, should we then, is the timeline for action from the governor, John Schwanes, a month or two now?
It's an ongoing process. Systemic racism, it took centuries to develop, and while I hope it doesn't take centuries to eradicate, it certainly can't be done with a snap of the fingers. I think the governor does deserve credit for some of the things that he has done. He was more vocal than his predecessors in terms of fighting for hate crimes legislation, for instance. He did appoint a cabinet official. Now, is that enough? Absolutely not. But I think in fairness to Eric Holcomb, you have to ask, does he go like some sprinter, out of the blocks on some issues and drag his heels on others? And I think my assessment would be he's sort of an incrementalist on everything. I mean, he had a group that studied child welfare reform. He had a group that studied, now there's one that's looking at health in the state of Indiana. He had another one that Ann liked to malign on teacher salaries. I think this is sort of what you get with Eric Holcomb. And that's not a criticism. I think judicious action is usually better than shooting from the hip. So you can assess the problem. Again, I'm not trying to minimize racism. It is a serious problem that has to be dealt with in the state. But it does, to Mike's point, pay to actually know what we can target and make progress. So I think we will see some activity, but I wouldn't dismiss altogether the things that have taken place thus far. And again, you have to view it in the context of his addressing virtually every other issue. I can't think of an issue where he's just said, here's what I'm going to do, man the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
He operates the way you run, very, very slowly.
Well, that's all right. I'm not sure I even run anymore. It's more of a walk.
One year after the state launched an optional program to help landlords and tenants see if they can reach an eviction settlement out of court, tenant advocates say the program hasn't seen enough buy-in to be effective. The Landlord and Tenant Settlement Conference Program tries to bring both parties to the table by offering a free session with a neutral mediator. As of August 4th, the program had 791 requests for mediation, but only 48 cases have actually been facilitated, and barely half of those resulted in a tenant staying in their property. Andrew Bradley is the policy director with Prosperity Indiana, which advocates for stronger tenant protections. He says, with an estimated 56,000 eviction filings in the state since the start of the pandemic, it's clear the program hasn't been a solution to housing instability.
I think what we're seeing is that without that buy-in and without a mechanism to get people at the table, it's not going to have a systemic significant impact on this housing stability crisis.
Bradley says he'd like to see participation required. A spokesperson for the Indiana Supreme Court, which runs the program, says it's focused on optional participation.
Ann Delaney, can this program be effective if it's optional?
No, and witness the results. I mean, Indiana is a very, very pro-landlord state, which is part of the reason that our eviction rate is much, 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 much higher than surrounding states and at the top of the nation. It is not going to change with the kind of legislation that comes out of the Indiana General Assembly. Now, you know, some of the money that's coming in is going to help, I suppose, except that the Supreme Court's, the U.S. Supreme Court's action on the moratorium that President Biden tried to extend is going to result in more evictions. We're going to have a crisis that's going to be very substantial in Indiana. I give kudos to the city of Indianapolis, which has figured out a way to get that money out and to help tenants and to pay landlords. In fact, Indianapolis has given out more in Marion County than the rest of the state combined, which shows how poorly the state has worked with the system to try to help alleviate some of the crisis caused by COVID. And I'm really concerned about what's going to happen with evictions as this moratorium goes out of function, unless the governor steps in, which of course is not going to happen. Unless he would step in, we're going to have a massive number of evictions over the next 6 months, and we're going to have homeless people, and the spread of the disease is going to continue.
On that point about Marion County versus the rest of the state now has gotten up to, I think it's like $150 million at least of the rental assistance money that it's received from the federal government has been paid out. So I think the state is surpassing certainly Marion County. But Mike O'Brien.
Marion County had $91 million.
Yeah, I think the state is still higher. But Mike O'Brien, to that point, though, a little bit on the rental assistance program, it's a little similar here in that for the rental assistance program to work, the landlord has to agree to it, not just the tenant asking for it. Here, the landlord and tenant both have to agree to go to this. Does it work if we're just making these things optional like that?
It doesn't work because, like most of this COVID relief money, we've done a poor job identifying who really needs it and whose money we're just pouring into people's pockets who don't need it. For example, on the stimulus funds. On this piece, if you're housing insecure, if you've lost your job and you're poor, everything's harder. So go ahead and make it mandatory. I mean, the comment that was made that this isn't going to cure anything systemic is right, because people who are housing insecure don't understand or have the resources to go understand how they're going to enter into some kind of like negotiation with their landlord. And the landlord's been stressed over the course of the last 18 months as well. These often, most of the time, are not like corporate conglomerates that own these rental units. They're people who have like their nest eggs sunk into it. So navigating these like government support programs is really complicated. And if you're already worried about where you're going to live next month, it makes it even harder.
Yeah, to that point, John Schwanes, this goes back to fundamentally the program itself. If you are facing eviction and in that situation, is a free session with a neutral mediator going to do the trick?
It may not be the answer that a lot of tenants in dire straits are looking for. They're probably already, their backs are to the wall because of loss of jobs or because of health issues. And perhaps they couldn't get to work or lost their jobs. I'm not sure that getting to a mediation appointment or arbitration appointment, I'm not sure where it would take place. Presumably, I don't know where it would take place. But I mean, that's yet another wrinkle that would be difficult potentially for them. It's a fine program. I'm glad it's an option, but this state and this country is going to have to wrestle with this, and it's going to be a big problem. There is money out there, as has been noted. I think $50+ billion was earmarked from the federal government for these purposes, and I think nationally, maybe only a tenth of that or so has been distributed. Again, it's the states have had trouble, and cities have had trouble. Indiana's no different in that regard. So I don't know how you would deal with a logjam like that, but it's going to be tough for a lot of people here in the coming months.
And Anne referenced this, which is the U.S. Supreme Court really permanently, finally struck down the CDC's eviction moratorium. That is ended. It's not coming back unless Congress does something, so it's not coming back. And Nikki, in terms of buy-in on this program, if it can help at all, which I suppose is a question, but if it can help and if it's buy-in that will do that, is the impending crisis of evictions here and everywhere, is the impending crisis perhaps going to create more of that buy-in?
I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, this issue is past. Like, these evictions are going to happen and we got to start dealing with them. And maybe instead of running this money through cities, and this is literally just a, you know, brain issue, maybe you give judges access to the money. They're going to hear these people and see, you know, see them in court and know who has access to what money. Maybe they could be, you know, more accurately direct the money, as Mike said, to people who actually need it versus just who just aren't, you know, going to work.
Yeah. All right.
I think I just heard the legislature crying foul, but we'll.
Yeah.
All right. Well, just over half of eligible Hoosiers 12 and over are fully vaccinated so far. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports a campaign launched this week by the Indiana Chamber of Commerce will publicly acknowledge employers that have higher numbers of vaccinated workers.
Jennifer Ferrer is the executive director of the Chamber's Wellness Council of Indiana. She says businesses have played a role in employee health for years on public health issues like smoking. And the COVID-19 vaccination is just the latest issue employers need to address to keep their businesses safe.
While the mandates on vaccination are hard for our employers to really move forward with, we strongly encourage employers to look at vaccination as a way to get the workforce back into the workplace and keep them in the workplace.
Ferrer says employers can inquire about employees' vaccination status without it being a HIPAA violation.
John Schwannis, we've talked on the show before about the private sector really being the one to push the ball forward at this point on getting folks vaccinated, because it seems like the state has done what the state can do. So is this sort of recognition a meaningful way to do that?
It helps. Everything helps when you have business organizations that have the respect, presumably, of its membership across the state saying, this is what you should do. This is what your peers are doing. We'd like to see you do it too. So it helps. It, you know, it'd be interesting to see what kind of teeth could be put into it. I'm reminded of what some states do, where you walk into a public facing business, restaurants or bars, for instance, and they have the required health posting of what their inspection grade is. You know, it's a 98 or an A. I wonder if they're, it'd probably be voluntary, because I don't know who would have the clout or power to do this, but require all public facing businesses to say, post on your, in a prominent location in your lobby or front door, or do you require all of your employees to be vaccinated or not? That's just a sort of a caveat emptor, buyer beware situation.
Yeah, so John, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the state of Indiana is not going to do that.
Well, I'm saying that's why it would probably be a voluntary program. It would be interesting, though, and that probably would maybe in the healthcare sector might compel some action, yeah, among nursing homes and clinics.
Speaking of the private sector, we saw a new take on a version of a vaccine mandate without being a mandate this week. Delta Airlines is going to be charging employees who refuse to get vaccinated for COVID more money for their healthcare coverage, the same way that a lot of companies do for smokers, for instance. Nikki Kelly, you talked to the governor about that very issue this week. What did he have to say about that idea?
I was just curious. Obviously, the state can't require vaccinations due to the legislature passing that passport law. But, you know, you can maybe put some incentives or more rightly disincentives it maybe into the system. He said he's not there yet, but he certainly is increasingly frustrated. And he said he understands, especially in like the airline industries or, you know, processing plants. He said, you know, if people are sick and can't come in, like, we're now impacting getting goods and services. And so, yeah, he thinks, you know, seemed like a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Anne Delaney, as John mentioned, every little bit helps, it seems like, at this point. Is the idea of charging people more for their healthcare coverage if they refuse to get vaccinated a good strategy going forward for a lot of folks?
Oh, I think so. And I think the employers should say, you know, either get vaccinated or find another job. I am tired of these people who don't think they have any responsibility to get vaccinated, and it's their body and it's their choice. Okay. Well, they're also infecting the rest of us. Anecdotally, I'm hearing from people with school-aged children left and right that they're being furloughed for 2 weeks at a time without having remote learning set up because somebody in that group didn't get vaccinated. I mean, I the idea that you could require a vaccination for chickenpox and not for a disease that kills you is incredible. I mean, we need to do everything we can to tell people this isn't just about their body. It's about everybody's health. It's about the economy of the country. We're about 3 weeks from being where Florida is, where the ICUs are overwhelmed again, elective surgeries not allowed in Indiana again at all, not just in half, and all because we have a pandemic among people who are not vaccinated. And it's absolutely inexcusable. So anything that can be done, whether it's carrot or stick, to make people do what they should have done months ago should be done.
Mike O'Brien, we've talked before about the reluctance, obviously, of some to mandating the vaccine. Is this what I'm going to call the Delta Airlines idea, but this idea of charging them more for their health care coverage, is that potentially more palatable to employers who would balk at a mandate?
Yeah, I mean, it's a stick instead of a scratch-off lottery ticket, right? I mean, it's like it's just the... You know, it's penalizing you instead of trying to coax you into doing it. I mean, ultimately, will it help more people do it? Probably. There's not a silver bullet here on getting everybody to do this, and there's no mechanism that you can put in place where we just argue that anything some government deems to be in the public interest is now mandatory on private industry or private employers. So can we celebrate, like the Indiana Chamber proposed this week, the, you know, promoting companies that have high vaccination rates, and make this a positive thing? We should. I mean, are we entering a place where the strong arm of government's going to reach into these companies and force them to do different things? I hope not, but in some places it seems like that's where it's going.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, why would you get a vaccine that clearly works when you could take livestock medicine? Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should companies charge employees who won't get vaccinated for COVID-19 more for their health insurance coverage? A, yes, or B, no. Last week, we asked you whether Governor Eric Holcomb is optimistic or naive about the potential of his public health commission. 38% of you say optimistic, 62% say naive. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Hoosiers have a chance to win money for drawing so-called fair legislative district maps. It's part of a contest by the redistricting reform advocacy group All In for Democracy. The group argues that the current map-making process in which state lawmakers draw the lines according to the Indiana Constitution produces districts that unfairly favor the majority party. This year, reform advocates want to provide alternative maps drawn by people outside the legislative process. And to help generate those, All In for Democracy will give the Hoosier who submits the fairest state house district map $3,000. The winning state senate map gets $2,000, and $1,000 goes to the best congressional map. But what exactly constitutes fair? The group says its judging will be based on how well the maps keep cities and counties whole, whether they unfairly advantage one political party, and how well they keep together communities of interest, which it defines as groups of people in a concentrated geographic area who share similar interests, concerns, or priorities that need a voice in government. Nikki Kelly, is this a way to move the needle on getting the public more invested in redistricting?
Well, maybe. I have a feeling a lot of the people who will go online and do these maps are probably already really into the weeds on this issue anyway. But, you know, I look forward to seeing some of them. I might go online myself and mess around with it. I'm a little confused how you judge fairness. I mean, there's the question of whether it, you know, disadvantages a political party or another. But in order to judge that, you actually have to put the political data in, which is, you know, allegedly not what we should be doing. So, you know, I'm fascinated to see what some people come up with.
Yeah, there is the judging criteria. Obviously, there are things you have to do legally in terms of the Voting Rights Act, and you can go online. But this is complicated, and it'll be interesting to see first how many people they get to actually do the maps and potentially win this money, and then whether or not that moves the needle with lawmakers is, I suppose, another question entirely. I'm a little skeptical of that, but unfortunately, that'll have to be it for this week. That is Indiana Week in Review. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please get vaccinated if you can, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.